And with us is Steve McCaughey from the Seaplane Pilots Association. This is our traditional closing segment because it sets up the low and slow fun on the water and gets us set for another year. But before we close this one out, let's talk about 2026 with the Seaplane Pilots Association. You've had a good show so far, I'm sure.
Oh, we've had a wonderful show. We moved the cornrows from our general night on Thursday to the seaplane base for the first time on Tuesday night, and it was spectacular, except for the 30-knot wind coming off the lake. But great attendance. We were a little bit nervous about moving the time and the location, but EAA was just a pleasure to work with, and they made everything happen for us. So big shout-out, as always, to all the volunteers that make the show possible and EAA for working with organizations like ours.
Good. How are things at the seaplane base this year?
Oh, it was great. We had a great turnout. Again, a little windy a couple of days, but we had the Watermelon Social last night, and a lot of people from EA Radio came and enjoyed the evening with us. And no, it was great. Super airplanes, a lot of activity, and we always like bringing people from the main show because it's one of those hidden secrets at Oshkosh Air Venture that a lot of people don't even know the seaplane base exists, so we try to get as many people over there as possible.
Were there any outstanding aircraft that came in this year that surprised you?
What did we have? Of course, the Marchetti. We had a Thurston Teal that came from Florida, which is a major trip to doing that, and a really unique aircraft, first appearance at AirVenture, and that was probably one that kind of got my eye the most.
Explain the Teal. I'm not familiar with it.
Teal is like a predecessor to maybe the Lake Amphibian.
Okay.
A high thrust line airplane engine mounted above the fuselage flying boat, and this one is a beautiful restoration, all polished, and the guys have been after us to do a story in the magazine forever, and I think I know we did a photo shoot with it, so it'll appear in Water Flying, hopefully in one of the upcoming issues.
Okay. And that is a pure float plane, not an amphib?
It's a flying boat, and it is an amphib, though. It does have retractable gear.
The pilot had to figure out where to land
along the way.
And that, of course, leads us into one of the big benefits of the Seaplane Pilots Association, and that is helping people find where
absolutely. So we just did a big overhaul of our Water Landing Directory app. Matter of fact, we had a meeting out at the Seaplane Base Friday morning. Yesterday morning. And we kind of started the beta testing on the new Water Landing Directory app. And the app shows people where they can land, what the restrictions are on the water. And for the first time, it has a moving map function, and it'll be pushable. We can download the database to ForeFlight and Garmin products. So it's a huge upgrade for us from what we've had previously, and we're really excited about it. So hopefully in the next 30, 45 days, it'll be out there for everyone to use.
Good. So rather than a paper directory, we've gone high tech.
This is the second version of it. I did the first app in 2012, but we've been kind of on a platform that was a little dated, and we knew we were going to have to replace it, and we went full bore, and thanks to donors.
Yeah.
Donor support makes it happen.
Good. What are some of the challenges? I know access to waterways is always a big one, and you were narrating the seaplane flyby yesterday. Did I hear you mention that there's actually a state in the country that does not allow people to land on water?
Yes, New Jersey is restricted. Which is crazy because we had historically one of the a great seaplane school there. Yeah. But states vary greatly in their level of access. In Florida, we have tremendous access. In Minnesota, Wisconsin, we have Michigan, we have tremendous access. But then we have states like Colorado where we did not have any. We've successfully opened two bodies of water and created public seaplane bases there. But it's a big challenge. And most of the pushback comes to safety, environmental concerns, and aquatic invasive species. Mm-hmm. And basically, we just have to educate the regulators and the waterway managers. And that's what we do. Part of what we do as an advocacy organization is interfacing with legislators and regulators and managers to try to get them to understand. Seaplanes are a very unique vehicle. People aren't used to seeing them. Right. Most regulators and waterway managers and law enforcement have never had exposure. So we'll do like a discovery day where we bring an airplane and we'll spend a day, we'll do a barbecue lunch, and we'll give them an education on it to try to break the ice with them.
Good. Do you have advocates around the country?
We do.
Volunteer to help?
Yeah, similar to EAA, we're really volunteer driven in many. The horsepower of the organization is through our volunteer network. So we have a field director network, and we have regional heads, and then we'll have a lead field director in each state. So right now we have about 80. My goal is to have 250. So we have like a semi-autonomous team in every state that are helping us be the boots and feet on the ground, kind of working issues and air shows and
sure.
going out doing public events.
Good. So. Invasive species, that's something that we didn't talk about 20 years ago, but it is increasingly a big problem, not only for seaplanes, but also for boaters as well.
Yeah, and so most of our members are boaters as well. If you own a seaplane or operate a seaplane, you have a fairly high propensity to be a boat owner as well. So Our members are kind of acclimated to what they need to do, but we have a very aggressive training program. And again, we spend a lot of time. I worked with an engineer and we developed a pump so you can pump out the seaplanes, and it filters the water. So it filters any invasive species that may have got into the float out as you pump the water. And you can drink the water coming out of the pump when we're done. So
wow. Very good. What other challenges are you looking at besides legislative and invasive species?
Falling seaplane pilot numbers, aging population and falling numbers. We're generating about 3,000 new seaplane pilots a year, but even with that, we have an erosion of the total population of about 1,000 pilots a year. And I'm very, very concerned about that. And that's part of what our foundation scholarship program is about, is to try to get 18 to 25-year-olds engaged. And we have a $2,500 scholarship that we'll provide about a dozen times a year. And at major events all across the country, we award that scholarship. And even here at AirVenture, if you signed up to be a member, you're going to go into a raffle to get $2,500 in training to get your seaplane rating.
Does that pretty much cover that rating?
For the most part. We used to say you could go anywhere you wanted and we'll write the check. But I got a couple of $13,000 seaplane ratings that we had to adapt to the situation
sure,
a little
sure.
bit.
How hard is it to get that rating?
You know, I would like to say it depends on your pilot skills. Mm-hmm. What I think it's an opportunity for people that learned on glass cockpits that may have not developed the stick and rudder skills that we used to develop as pilots in primary training. Whether you go get your tail wheel endorsement, you do aerobatic training, you get a glider rating, or you do a seaplane rating, all of these things give you an opportunity to get better basic airmanship skills, stick and rudder skills that a lot of pilots aren't being exposed to. But in 3 to 5 days, most people can get a seaplane rating in under 7 hours. And that gives you a license to learn.
Right. Oh, exactly. like any pilot certificate. Yeah. Yes, it's a license to learn and to keep learning. Of course, Jack Brown's seaplane base is very, very famous, and they're still going strong with the J3s on floats.
Yeah. We've got an exciting program with them. So last year we spent 2025 working with Sporty's Pilot Shop and Patty Wagstaff, mm-hmm. which was an honor. We go back 30 years, and we developed a new seaplane rating course for Sporties.
Okay.
And now at Jack Brown's, they're going to make it a prerequisite that you watch the course before you even start their training. But we got to use my Super Cub flying with Patty, and it's a great program. And we also have a great photo contest with them right now. If you submit your photo to sporties.com seaplane photo contest, we're going to pick a winner. They're going to get a $1,000 shopping spree with Sporties. But they'll also have a chance to get their photo on the cover of Sporty's catalog next year.
Good.
So, good stuff.
Good. Was it? Did Patty get her rating to go through that course?
Patty actually had
she
her
did.
Rating,
okay.
which
Doesn't
a lot of people
me.
Don't yeah. know. So I actually knew Patty when she was flying a 185 in Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
Before she started aerobatics.
Right.
So this was kind of a chance for her to come back. We had been talking about it for years, and we finally had an opportunity to make it happen with Sporties. And they were great people to work with.
Oh, yeah.
Great team.
If you mentioned the foundation, what other work is going on with the foundation?
So we have, I do several training video programs. So we have amphibious gear education program, because one of the biggest safety items for floatplane pilots is landing gear down.
Right.
It's a very hazardous condition. And so we one of the things we have to do is most of the flight schools are training in straight flow planes,
right.
And most of the people that buy a seaplane are going to buy an amphibious, so there's a training gap. So one of our big focuses is how can we, what you learn first, you learn deepest. We want to have to retrain those people to operate an amphib safely. Mm-hmm. And so we do safety training videos and programs, and people get wings credit even just for watching the video and taking a short test. 500 safety seminars in 15 years that I've conducted. We've done several here. And then we have a podcast where we interview other people. All these things are supported, education-based, and, of course, the scholarship program is the hallmark of what we want to do.
Good. If someone wants more information about the foundation, what's your website?
Seaplanefoundation.org. And, okay. of course, Seaplane Pilots Association is seaplanes.org. Super
Good.
Simple.
Good. And what's next for you? Where are you off to after this?
Greenville, Maine.
Okay.
To Moosehead Lake for the largest seaplane event in the country, and then the following weekend in Brainerd, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
So, and then Tavares, Florida for the Monster Splash In.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a busy schedule.
Well, you got to take it when the weather is good, right?
Yeah.
Steve McCauley from the Seaplane Pilots Association. Steve, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. It's good and it's wonderful to catch up with you, but then I also know that this is the getting toward the end, but we do appreciate you stopping by and sharing the Seaplane Pilots Association story with us. That is going to close out our show for this year, and we'd like to thank all of our guests, you, our listeners, the EAA radio team, and everyone who helped make this another memorable week, celebrating the people, stories, and the spirit of aviation. Until next year, good Lord willing and the creek don't rise, we'll be back with more from the stand. I'm Steve Buss, and this is EAA Radio.